The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Welcome back to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. I'm Ken Napsok, and that's right, we are back. The Wrestling Viewpoint Network went dormant again. It's just something that happens in life. I can't always talk about professional wrestling, but we're back here, broadcasting from behind the emblem of the Wrestling Viewpoint Network with a new show that I'm going to help bring out into the world. It's already been out there. It's not like it's a new show. But I was recently a guest on a podcast called The Gimmick Podcast, hosted by Mark Donica, also the hobo from Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, a.k.a. Brandon Taylor, hosts the show as well. He wasn't on this episode. They kind of share those duties or host together when they can. They record it very much on the fly, and they stream it live on a little service, and it's fun. And Mark and I had a great time talking wrestling. Mark's one of my favorite up-and-coming broadcasters in this town. And the hobo is very well documented, is one of my favorite workers in SoCal. And he had a great episode of the Napsok Files logged a few months back. So even though they have their own service and they kind of put it out into the world already, I said, hey, would you mind if I take the raw file here and kind of try to spruce it up? The audio at times is not the best, but we are working on it. But I just wanted to get it out in the world. I think it's a good, fun interview. It's not often that I get to sit and talk about wrestling with other people interviewing me and talking with me about wrestling on a podcast. So I wanted to get it out in the world. But we're going to do more. More, not just me. Whenever the boys and sometimes the frequent guest Kathy Kelly, they sit down. They're the three of them host the AfterBuzz NXT show, and it's a great show, and it's a, you know, NXT is probably the best wrestling show around, so to get to do the post-game wrap-ups on that, I love it. Those are three of my favorite people in this town, so I love what they do. So it is with great joy that I bring this to you, the Gimmick Podcast, hosted by Mark Donica, taped on the fly, via phone, on location, at the AfterBuzz TV studios in Los Angeles, California. So please, take a listen, enjoy, and follow them on Twitter as well. We'll get you that at the end of the show.
Internet, welcome to another episode of the Gimmick Podcast, your source for all the pro wrestling bullshit. No actual news, we just like to fuck around. I am one of your hosts, the Internet Soapbox Mark, and joining me is somebody that I've wanted on the show since its inception, and that's Ken Napsok.
Hey!
It's
great. This is live, huh?
This is live.
The power of live. The phone.
I flip and love it.
It's great.
And microphone quality is getting better, so it's like, as long as you have a good place to record, we're
getting,
yeah, we're in essentially a closet at the AfterBuzz TV studios, and I've never sat down and really talked wrestling with you.
Right.
So I wanted to know how it started. What was your first experience with professional wrestling?
Like many kids, it was young. So for me, probably, if I could, you know, it's hard to put a date on it because I was so young, but it was 83 to 85.
All right.
So during right when the boom happened, the Hulkamania started running wild. I remember the Saturday morning cartoon show,
Rock and Wrestling,
and all that kind of stuff. And I used to, my mom and dad would rent for me a lot of the Coliseum home videos.
Oh yeah.
I learned a lot of the stuff there, and it was just, you know, house shows and Madison Square Garden shows and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of got in there. Then I learned about 85, 86, maybe around that time, I learned that this might not have been on the up and up. And it was pointed out to me that, they may have planned some of this stuff out. And I stopped watching cold.
Oh, just cold turkey?
I felt so gypped as a kid. Like, man. No way. No way I'm going to stop. And then it was probably like 88, 89. I remember Hogan Warrior, WrestleMania 6, me kind of being intrigued by it. Mm-hmm. And that WrestleMania 6 time frame is about when I started getting back into it. And then it's a weird thing, but the return of the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, as a solo single star. So that's circa 90, I think, 89, 90. He came back, and I was a big fan of the British Bulldogs.
And so, dreads and all, you were super into Davey Boy
And it was like, whoa, hey, no Dynamite Kid, no Matilda, no dog, but at least I think maybe he came back with a dog at one point.
There was the dog was in in there for a little bit.
But he came back, and I was like, oh. And then I started talking with a friend of mine, my friend Gavin, who was a big wrestling guy, and it was just one of those things at school, talking about this, and I liked Mr. Perfect and all that era.
How can you not like Mr. Perfect?
And I was back in.
Okay.
You know, I loved Perfect. You know who also I loved?
Who?
The Genius.
How? I mean, there's really nobody...
Their little mini feud with Hogan, their little mini program I enjoyed.
There was so much to love, and the fact I didn't know that you got jaded so early.
Yes. Yes.
So what was it like coming back with the new mindset? How did that change how you watched the product?
Great
adjustment.
It was, I guess, that's a great question. You just got a little older, and by the time, I want to say it was the pomp and circumstance. It was the story. Mm-hmm. And it combined all these awesome elements to me that I still am in love with to this day. So it was storytelling, character, and the entrances, which by then were, by 89, 90, were so different from 84, 85.
As opposed to just somebody walking to the ring, you've got the,
right,
the music booming through the arena.
Right.
It's and nothing, there's nothing like the Ultimate Warrior's entrance.
Exactly. Like, Demolition. Here comes the axe. Here comes the smash. I was
the really on the nose themes back
yes,
in the
yes,
80s.
Yes, yes, this guy will wrestle you and defeat you with a three count. That, but then I was back in and never stopped. There's a little bit of a wane, and it's weird. I've discussed this in some other podcasts that I've done on wrestling. During the Attitude Era, I stopped watching.
Which company?
All of it.
Oh, yeah?
All of it. I had moved to L.A. in 1998 to pursue my comedy dreams and all that kind of stuff, and had a four-roommate situation,
yeah,
and only two of us liked wrestling. And back in that day, you didn't have the options to go into your room or turn on the WWE Network, all that kind of stuff. So often I lost out, and it just kind of faded out.
Yeah.
And didn't watch wrestling during a good five-year period. Kept tabs on it. So I got to see The Rock and Austin and all that stuff at their height, but about right around 96, 97 into 98 is when I kind of faded out. And then I came back in fully 2005, and I got into the wrestling business in 2001, but even then...
So you weren't watching the product for 4 years?
Yes.
Huh. So what was... well, I mean, got there super early. But I was wondering, what did you ever see it live?
Not till late.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see just economics of the family. We didn't go out and see a lot of wrestling. My mom didn't like wrestling, still doesn't. My dad was always intrigued by it. As a kid, used to watch, you know, Gorgeous George and Lou Thesz. Well, no, Buddy Rogers more than Thesz. So my dad was familiar with it from that standpoint, but never got into it too much.
Okay.
He'd watch it over my shoulder to be like, oh, that guy, look how big that guy is. I remember him, the Warlord. Like, he just couldn't stop talking about the Warlord. Look at those shoulders, you know. And I was like, Dad, he eats chicken and hits the gym hard.
Knew all of that from the training regimen from a young age.
Yeah. He says his prayers and eats his vitamins, Dad. That's why the Warlord's big. But by 2001, I should say, I got into it again, because, again, I was in wrestling by this time, and then I faded out a little bit. By 2005, I was back full-time.
Okay. Was there ever an aspiration to be in the ring as a wrestler?
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the high school, after I learned I couldn't play baseball, I would not get to the New York Yankees as I wanted to as a child. I wanted to be a comedian and writer and all that kind of stuff, too, but I wanted to be in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, Joel Trudgeon, my high school buddy, he got into wrestling big too, and he wanted to be in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So what did we do? We did what any good kid did. We started our own wrestling federation in our front yard. Now, this nowadays, when you hear backyard wrestling, it can be, that's a little bit different.
It can be damning. It's, yeah.
That's not a good thing.
No.
Not that there's, hey, Punk came from backyard
wrestling.
But I watched that Punk documentary and how they made money off theirs. We had two two old ladies next door who just sit out there on their porches watching us going, oh,
look at the little
loco gringos, lucha libre again. And we had mattresses we strung together over tarps. Mm-hmm. Our ring ropes were bungee cords, but
that's a problem.
We had no top rope aerial maneuvers. Thank God, that's probably what saved our lives.
Probably for the best. Didn't put it next to the roof, did you?
We had a ladder that we climbed up, and we would get up on the ladder. There's some video. There's VHS tape of this stuff. We called it the Napomo Wrestling Federation because my friend lived in Napomo, California. Mm-hmm. I was from nearby Arroyo Grande, California, up there in the central coast of California by Pismo Beach. And so this is our last 2 years of high school and our first year of college. I should also point out I did not have a good track run with the ladies for a long time.
I was
going
to say, how is the dating life now that you are a famous front yard professional wrestler?
It is as bad as you would anticipate.
And I'm sitting over here laughing and not at the situation, but just at the way that you described it was how Brandon and I had the idea for our backyard wrestling federation, which we were the Bounce House Wrestling Federation.
Perfect.
So anytime anybody had a party with Bounce House, hey, let's do a show.
Is that where the hobo got his true
name? No. The hobo was the Beast back then. That was his gimmick.
But I mean, Brandon himself,
I don't know if that was where he first got the itch or if that was the first time where he was like, you know what, maybe this could be something. But he and Joe went on Haynes Classic.
Joe Galley
went on there, like, right after high school. They went to start training, and it was something that I could never afford. And being a theater student, I could never afford, right as I was starting to get a job that where I could afford to do it, FitPit closed down. So I was like, well, there went that idea.
Well, and that's also hilarious how small world this is, because I got back into wrestling in 2010, and two of the first people I met and just had a lot of respect for what they were doing at a young wrestling age were Haynes Classic and the Hobo, coming out of Ryan Katz's school over there.
Haynes Classic and the Hobo were the two characters, and I loved everybody who had come out of his school, but those were the two characters where it was like, not just because they were my friends, but it was like, these guys are something different. They're taking an idea and flipping it on its ear. Like,
I'll tell you about Haynes Classic.
Please.
Joe Galley, who is now a respectable newsman.
He's a newsman.
He was on a show for Millennium Pro Wrestling. We ran it over for a while. We were running it at a restaurant in Simi Valley. And it was,
Yankee Doodles.
We had some great shows there, man. We pack it out, 150 people. The wrestling action was right in your face. All the stuff. We had a show that had, like, Davey Richards, Akira Tozawa, all these people were on the show. We brought in some talent. And I had some family who came and saw the show. A couple days later, they write me, thank you so much for inviting us. We had a great time. We're not huge wrestling fans, but we loved it. We love Haynes Classic.
Really? I was expecting, like, a bad story.
No.
Because I remember when he used to walk to the ring, he used to take a drink of water,
yes,
get up to the ropes, give the middle rope a bit of a stroke, and spit out.
Yes.
Yeah. Do the whole gimmick
still. He was a little profane, but they loved him for it. And they took pictures with him afterwards. And I can't remember if the hobo was on that card or not. He was another popular one, too. Our fan base loved the hobo. But I just... And that, to me, was the core of pro wrestling. Look, Davey Richards is one of my favorite people to watch
work. Richards is a mastermind.
And he was a gentleman for us as a company. I can't say nice enough things for him coming in. Just, hey, whatever you guys need me to do. And he put over Ryan Taylor. And
that's great.
He was so
good. Oh, I didn't know
so
he got
good.
Taylor.
He's
good.
So good. He was so good. Tozawa was great. To watch Tozawa and Ryan Taylor work. Anyways, I'm getting off track. The point in, you bring in these guys, these workers and the work rate and this and that. But it's really about storytelling, character, and the fans. I'm not taking any away from those guys. Make sure that's clear. But to me, on a simple level, my family didn't watch wrestling on a weekly basis. It was the dude in the underpants who came out with the Viking horn mask. And they were like, that guy, Haynes Classic, that's our favorite. Do you like Davey Richards? Who? Yeah, I like the guy in the underpants.
Was he still coming out with the rooster with the ring around his neck?
Yes.
God,
So
the stuff he was doing.
And to me, I loved what Ryan Katz taught all those guys. Katz taught character. He taught extravagant, pomp and circumstance and all that kind of stuff. One of my favorite things Katz did was have, like, a food cook-off in gimmick.
Yes, the tournament. It was a food and tournament. That
I was there. Were you there?
I was there.
Oh, we crossed paths.
It's ridiculous.
We crossed paths.
Might have been introduced even. Just like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, maybe. I was there.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah,
the fact that he had the hobo stew, and Haynes Classic had giant bratwurst. And
yes.
So I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, so that Mario Banks, Haynes Classic, and Hobo Brandon were the three guys that coming out of that we in Millennium Pro Wrestling just loved to work with. Joe eventually got a real job and had to get on out.
He's totally bit, though.
Yeah.
Any chance that he's had to get back into the ring, he takes.
As he should. But to watch the Hobo grow from what he was, which was from the beginning a solid guy, solid mm-hmm. worker, but to watch his legend grow has been fun for us to watch.
We were talking about the Hobo and character and his panhandling. That was something from the start that was always an amazing idea, because even with that very first show, it was like right before his match. He would get like,
yes.
We would know, we would, you know, put the money in, and then he would just get in the ring and start fighting. Like, what the hell's going on?
I saw when MPW moved from Yankee Doodles to the Simi Valley Boys and Girls Club, we had a lot more children in the audience, and they fell for it, but families too.
Yeah.
And even he was pretty clearly gimmicked out, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? He had black teeth and, you know, stuff like a lot of people, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, got the joke. But I'm telling you, there was a few adults who, when he all of a sudden got in the ring, they went, what? I gave that guy a book. I'm from in the parking lot. And I loved that about the character.
Even when we were packing for this last trip to New York, he was figuring out which jacket to bring. And he grabbed an old jacket and he looked in the pocket and he found like a 10. And he was like, oh, cool, this must be from an old show. Or something like in the lining of his hat or whatever. No, like it's that whole gimmick is something that I think will make people take a second look at him. And he got $5.97 on the PWI.
$4.97. And that's great to see.
Yeah. Any sort of the fact that he's made it onto that list is so good. So when did the transition from wanting to be a wrestler
mm-hmm.
to just being involved in the business happen?
Well, what happened is so we wrestled in the Pomo Wrestling Federation. I was called Fire Warrior. My friend Joel was the Canadian Cowboy from Red Deer, Alberta, Canada, where he was born, and we had it was like five or six of us, and we had these, one of the guys was called Buck Naked, we had the Sloth Hunter, we had all these characters. The Sloth Hunter went on to be one of the lead story editors and animators on SpongeBob SquarePants. So I won't say his name,
okay.
So he'll be embarrassed of us. He wasn't a wrestling fan, but he just hung out with us, and was like, sure, I'm your best friend, I will be the Sloth Hunter. From that, I was researching wrestling schools.
Mm-hmm.
Slammer's Gym came up. I used to listen to the late, great Dynamite D's show, radio show out of Slammers. But the reality is, much like baseball, I'm a writer, I'm a comedian, I'm a broadcaster. I'm not an athlete. And wrestlers are the best athletes in the world, in my opinion. And so it started to become clear to me also, I was graduated high school, 150 pounds. I wasn't a strong guy. I'm a little, if I had matured physically earlier, I would have had a little more confidence.
Yeah.
So the reality was, I don't know if I can do it, but Joel, you're 6'2", you can get there. I'm 5'9". I didn't sprout. Back then, 5'9" was kind of a death sentence to wanting to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
So that's why one of my favorites was Owen Hart, and even he was not 5'9". He was a lot taller and bigger. But I'd always loved the managers, and I've always loved Bobby Heenan, and I always loved Jimmy Hart, and I was researched on Paul Ellering and J.J. Dillon, and even back to like the Grand Wizard and Lou Albano, all those type of guys. So I was like, and I could talk, and I got a job in radio. I started my radio career at 18, so it's like natural fit. I might be a manager.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was like I didn't know how to go do that. And
yeah, there's a lot of wrestling schools. There isn't a lot of managers.
A lot of managing schools. And so it just kind of, like I said, I got my radio job. Then I started getting the focus on other things, moved to L.A. to start sketch comedy and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of just, it was something from, not my childhood, but it was something from my past. But that would have been fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, at my day job, met a guy who was working with me, who also happened to be running a wrestling company. And had done a couple shows. And he was a wrestler himself. Mm-hmm. And we became fast friends. And then he saw a video sketch of mine, and he had known my aspirations, and he's like, dude, I'll make you a manager. And
And so I became a manager with no experience, no training. 2001, managed a guy named Phenomenal Phil Lander, who was a mainstay in XPW at the time.
Okay.
And I was paired with him and had no idea what was doing, and you think you're going to go out and be Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Hart and like you're on a Saturday morning WWF Superstars show,
yeah.
And independent wrestling crowds are not that warm.
No.
I walked out. My character's name was Van Diemen, but spelled D-I-E-M-E-N. Van Diemen is, of course, the British magistrate that sent all the criminals to Australia. So that was a deep reference.
Yeah.
Might have been lost on a few. I thought
possibly.
People thought I was like the demon child of the demon and Van Hammer. So I managed, I came out, I was booed mercifully with my promo. It was a bad promo. First, we were wrestling a three-way match with those Phil versus Ecstasy is what we called them, and Prodigy, guy named Prodigy. And I was cutting a little promo during the match on the side of the ring to Prodigy, just, rah, 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 we're gonna get you, kid. And he kicked me through the ropes, cut open my face, had blood coming down the side of my face, my jaw, and then I took a splash from Phil later from on the, I was on the outside, top rope, you know, the wrestlers dove out of the way, and yeah. I took the brunt of it, so I took that, and no-selled it because I was so surprised I was alive, I no-sold it because I was like, I'm alive, and I like popped up, and,
oh,
and
thank God.
Phil held me down and goes, stay down, sell it. Oh, yes, that's right. I forget. This isn't real. So I managed Phil for a run, like 6 or 7 matches. We worked with Hardcore Kid once, and they ended up turning it into a shoot fight. Something happened. They had some heat from XPW days, and something happened, and it started as a shoot fight. I had no idea. I had a lot of fun. Didn't take many other bumps the rest of the time.
You got to get the biggest one out of the way first.
Right.
Then you work down.
Yeah, we had, and that time, Millennium Pro Wrestling, it was run by Paul Ventimiglia, who's wrestled, still wrestles technically, as Lethal Logan X. And at the time, we had on our roster Samoa Joe, Frankie Kazarian, Chris Daniels, Messiah, we had Loki, we had Super Dragon, we had Joey Ryan starting out, Scott Loss starting out, we had Excalibur, we had we brought in Steve, I can't remember some of the other guys we brought in, and Adam Pearce. And the first show booked that I wasn't technically a part of had a guy named John Cena.
Never heard of him.
As the prototype.
Never heard of him.
Booked on the show.
Hope he turned into something.
$25. I think it worked out for that kid in his jean shorts, but he was pulled last minute because of some stuff going on with Drayson and UPW and all this kind of stuff. So those were the guys I was around, and our headliner, our champion for a long time, Tech Nine was another guy, late Tech Nine, and now unfortunately the late Cincinnati Red, the hardcore big red machine there. He was the man in the town at the time.
Yeah,
and
no, Red. I mean,
yeah, Red was great.
Was somebody. There's very few people like him around, and to get him in the California and Southern California territory was just
he was Mr. California.
Privilege.
It was great. We had the Ballad Brothers. Cheerleader Melissa was an 18-year-old rookie wrestling, valeting for the Ballad Brothers at the time. So those are the people I was surrounded by during that time. And Phil and I worked some good stuff. We had a great match with Frankie Kazarian. I took a baseball slide from Frankie.
So you and Frankie go back a while.
Funny thing is, Frankie Kazarian and I met in 2001, and it was in passing, and I was very shy and scared in the locker rooms because all these guys, and that was it. And we ran each other at Cauliflower Alley Club in Vegas, but I wasn't like, hey man, we wrestled, I managed against
you. Hey,
you
remember that this one match from
right.
4 years ago?
So by then it would have been 10, 11 years ago. So I started hosting Jedi Alliance here at the Popcorn Talk Network, and at the time it was the Schmoes No affiliated network, and Frankie wrote our editor, goes, hey, my name's Frankie Kazarian, I'm a wrestler, I have a big following, but I just want to talk Star Wars. I love Star Wars, and I think I can bring an audience to you to be a guest, but I just want to talk Star Wars. So my friend Mark Riley,
what a nerd,
passes me the email and says, some wrestler, the guy says he's a wrestler, wants to be on Jedi Alliance. So I read him, I'm like, holy crap, it's Frankie. So I wrote him, I go, look man, you won't remember me, but I used to, you know, my friend Paul used to run
Millennium Pro Wrestling. And he goes, oh, of course I remember Paul. And they, just a few months earlier at the Cauliflower Alley Club in Vegas, we had talked to them, him and Daniels, and Paul and him were chatting, but I just stood there silently because I'm just a dude.
Hello, greatest tag team.
Yeah, I'm a dude. So Frankie comes on, and I there's no way in my mind it. I said, yeah, you might remember you wrestled phenomenal Phil Lander in MPW. He goes, totally remember that match. Absolutely, February 2001. It wasn't at the other normal Jewish center. We were at the other one on Reseda, and I said, I go, yeah, after the match, we did the famous dreidel spot on Barry Cohen. And he goes, yeah, oh, God, absolutely, I remember that. And he absolutely remembered it. And Frankie, to this day, we've brought him on Jedi Alliance a few times, and Frankie Kazarian absolutely, even then, treated me the nicest of anyone we wrestled against, and now it's still one of the nicest guys in the business.
Yeah, from the couple of interactions of trying not to mark out while he's been here for Jedi Alliance, just like...
Yeah.
Still just super nice guy.
He gets it. Yeah. Frankie's one of the guys that gets this is a business. He loves it. He loves wrestling, but he approaches it with a good attitude, takes everything with a grain of salt, humble, now a family man with his awesome son, Rebel, who I have not met, but I love his name, Star Wars reference, of course, there. Can't say enough nice things about that guy.
So what are you... You're super busy. When did your last run with working for professional wrestling?
So we ended MPW in 2002 because Paul actually went to become a police officer, which he's now a detective in the city of San Fernando. So he kind of packed it up and time to go, and everyone else went their ways. And good luck, Frankie, Chris Daniels, Adam Pearce, Samoa Joe. Hope you guys do something in the business.
Hope something comes from
it. True story. It's documented in an interview somewhere. About six of the guys had no place to wrestle, and they were wrestling for Rev Pro, and they loved their experience in MPW. They said, well, let's start our own. Should we call it like MPW2? Nah, let's call it PWG, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. That was, and Paul was one of the first bookers to take Super Dragon and Rising Sun and Disco Machine and some of those guys, Excalibur, and kind of take them outside the comfort of Rev Pro and wrestle. Like, we put Super Dragon versus Low Key, and it was a great, intense match, and Low Key is a great, intense man and wrestler. So they went on to form PWG after that. So we pulled out, and I kind of stopped watching wrestling. Mm-hmm. It was done. It was fun. It was like, that was the only dream of mine that ever came true. Never going to play for the Yankees, but I got to be a wrestling manager for like seven matches. 2010, it's a long story. I'll cut as short as I can. There's also a documentary coming out of the first show at some point. A documentary is being filmed about Paul as a weird story how it happened. He's a police officer who used to be a wrestler, all the blah, 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 blah. We ended up having let's do a one-time return charity show for Millennium Pro Wrestling Returns. Cincinnati Red came out of retirement. Paul was going to put his badge on the line, and we cut a promo. We filmed a promo actually at the police station, and we got Rowdy Roddy Piper to come on the show. And Paul presented him an award at the Hollywood Improv. All this stuff. Lo and behold, Paul gets suspended because some politics, some stuff. The police chief, they didn't like that Paul was using his badge.
Yeah.
And it was, as you'll see in the documentary, hopefully it comes out soon, a lot more going on. But Paul put his career on the line, literally, jumping in the ring for that night. And it was turned out to be Cincinnati Red's final match. I got to manage Red along with Whiskey Fist McIntosh, one of the best characters in the business on a local independent level. If you haven't seen, look up Whiskey Fist McIntosh interviews Ryan Taylor, and one of the best interviews you ever see in wrestling, one of the funniest. We co-managed Red against Logan X with Piper in his corner.
Yeah.
And that was our comeback. I got punched by Piper. It was a great moment. We had a run-in. I got to cut a promo with Piper in a ring and to be around Rod. And then we were just going to do it for once. Mm-hmm. And we said, screw it. We're back. And we had a four-year run that ended in 2014. Different kind of run. Different talent came in earlier. We were making a little bit more money. Yankee Doodles and finance has a lot to do with it. In the end, we kind of were a feeder fed for our school. You know, we had a lot of guys who were green and a lot of guys who were rust, old rust. But we had fun doing it. And I got to manage for a while. I got to wrestle in a match. I got to go through a table. I got to take a chair shot. I've been caned.
Here's the difference between somebody who's like living their dream and somebody who's just doing a job.
Right.
You got to go through a table. You got to get caned. You had the opportunity
yes.
to have all of these experiences yes. in the ring, as opposed to like, get through a damn table. You got yeah. they want to hit me in the face with a cane. I was like, damn it, I guess I will. No, yeah. despite all of this, you still come out of it like, oh man, that was fun.
Let's one of the greatest again. Moments of my life, May 12th, 2012. It was a sad day. While driving to the arena, my uncle dies, who was one of the reasons I was in L.A. His donations, both emotionally and financially, kept me in L.A. to pursue my dreams. He was a big Nikolai Volkov fan because we were Russian. And he died. He had some medical stuff. And I was driving to Simi Valley Boys and Girls Club and found out my dad called me. My uncle died. And he had that moment of, should I go? What do I do? And I was like, nah. Uncle Nick would want me to wrestle because he wanted me to pursue my dreams. So I had it was the end of a program where my gimmick was Tex Tunney. I was the manager of the Territory Kings. It was the last scion of the Great Southern Promoters. And I had a program with Logan X where me and my guy, it was like the Heenan family versus Hogan or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And we had this whole great thing, Omar Slam Duncan, Mario Banks, Logan X had to defeat them. And if he defeated them, he would get the right to wrestle me finally. And he did. It was so good. It's so good. One of the great memories. And I knocked him with a trash can, and then he hulked up and got back, caned me so hard. God bless it, that hurt. And then he put me through a table. Mm-hmm. My best friend in real life, on the day my uncle dies, putting me through a table. And then the match ended up listed in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So it was a little bit of a dream. A dream. All your dreams don't need to lead to fame and fortune. Sometimes they just need to lead to having happened. Mm-hmm. And that was it's a day that'll live in infamy.
Do you have the magazine?
I do, absolutely.
Do you have it framed?
I don't have it framed. I have a picture somewhere. I have it up there. It was just a little funny thing. You know, Logan X defeats Tex Tunney after a three-way match. You know, it was just listed. And as a kid in the 90s, bought every issue of Pro Wrestling Illustrated to see it listed. It's a small thing, but it meant the world.
Yeah. That's so... So in going back to the fan that is Ken Knapsack, you said you're a big David Boy Smith fan.
Yeah.
Who are you liking these days? Who are you like watching on the TV?
Locally, you know, I don't get out to see a lot of the shows as much as I'd like locally. Mm-hmm. I watch Championship Wrestling it sounds like a service, but the Hobo's my favorite guy locally. And part of that's because I know Brandon.
Yeah.
And he's such deserving of success and hard work will pay off.
If nobody's listened to it, there's an episode of the Knapsack Files where it was the first time publicly mm-hmm. where Brandon showed up on a broadcast.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. If you want to know a little bit more about him, go to iTunes, go to Knapsack Files, find Brandon Taylor.
Yeah.
Is it listed as the Hobo or is it listed?
No, it's listed as Brandon Taylor.
Okay.
Might be Brandon Taylor, a.k.a. the Hobo.
So that...
Yeah.
And that just... knowing the guy for as long as I have, that's a really good interview, and you conducted it very well. And cool. he's surprisingly very open.
He gave the answers well. Locally, there as far as WWE, I mean, I watch the Fed, man. I love the Fed, man. I have no problem saying I'm a WWE guy to the core. I watch TNA every week until it changed channels. Mm-hmm. Then I haven't been able to find. I watch Ring of Honor. I'll do all that. Obviously, I'm a big supporter of Frankie Kazarian because of knowing him, but. I watch the Fed every week, man, and it's tough to say who do I love week in, week out. I love it all. I really do love it all because I've gotten to the point, growing up, it was all about I want Davey Boy Smith to have an Intercontinental title run. We had such a short one. Stuff happened behind the scenes. I was a big Piper fan. Mm-hmm. I was a big Bret Hart fan, big Shawn Michaels guy.
Hard not to be fans of any of these guys.
And you could tell the guys that I liked, the work rate guys, mm-hmm. rather than the Piper was just Piper. I was never a huge Hogan fan. Respect what he did, but I'm of the school of people came to watch Piper lose, not to watch Hogan win.
I am too.
I'm not taking anything away from Hogan because you couldn't two to tango type thing. But I went for the kind of the technical guys, those kind of guys. That's because
I thought before Owen Hart too.
Owen Hart, I loved
anybody
Owen Hart
from the Dungeon.
Loved Owen Hart. Loved the New Foundation. I loved High Energy, man. High Energy was a great tag team. I was a big tag team guy. I loved Demolition. Yeah, I know. they were a Legion of Doom Road Warriors knockoff, but I was a WWF guy. Demolition was my team. Nowadays, I absolutely loved what CM Punk did. I felt like we were watching one of the great voices of all time who got the current product and everything. He is a tough figure. I don't think I'd ever want to meet him out of respect for him. I want him to go enjoy his life. I'm such a fan of what he did and accomplished against all odds in a way. And yeah, he fought maybe more than he should have. You hear some of the stuff behind the scenes, if you choose to believe it. But I loved watching him work, but I'm so respectful of him. When he walked away, I would absolutely, I as a fan, don't need any more. It was like when Barry Sanders retired from the NFL way earlier than we would have liked. This guy owes us nothing. He gave us everything.
Better to go out at the peak than start to really super
absolutely.
Degrade.
Absolutely.
Like, some people.
But if I watch every week, I gotta tell you, I am a big fan of women's wrestling.
Can't shut us up here at the gimmick about that.
I am a big fan of women's wrestling simply because it's just, to me, it's part of a viable, well-rounded roster. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned I didn't watch a lot in the Attitude Era. Look, I, as a red-blooded American a-hole pervert, I loved the good Braun Panties match, all right? But I didn't care about
it.
That's all we got. I would rather watch Lita and Trish Stratus
Main Event Raw.
Go for it. I'd rather watch that. And nowadays, and then you, when you work the indies and you see a lot of girls out there who could go, and I love watching cheerleader Melissa work. I used to love watching, I got the chance to see Alice in Danger and Sarah Del Rey work locally.
Lucky.
I still am a big fan of Thunder Kitty, who's one of our local, she's out in the Midwest now. Love Thunder Kitty. I loved watching that type of stuff. Nikki the New York Knockout was out here as well for a while. I love watching that, so I'm a big fan of it, and I don't like to see it trivialized, and it was for years until NXT, thank God, comes along. And I mean, that Sasha Banks Bayley match was one of the best things to witness in a long time. Natty Neidhart versus Charlotte, one of the best things to witness in a long time. And it isn't just about titillation and sex appeal, it is about women doing exactly what they want to do, which is put on great matches, and you invest in the stories. And then in truth, I become even more enamored with those women. I would date any one of them in a second, even though I'm far too old and creepy. But it's like I have so much respect. Paige is absolutely one of my favorite
ones. She's great, and she comes from a long line of it, and starting so young.
Because she's a wrestler.
Yeah.
She's not a model. And look, you are always going to have models turned wrestlers and weightlifters turned wrestlers. That is always going to be the case, because guess what, folks? It always was the case. Oh, you're a big football player, need to make some money in the offseason? Come wrestle.
Yep.
You're a circus sideshow freak? Come wrestle.
Baron Corbin.
Yeah. So that's not going to change. They're always going to find some fitness model and try to teach her to bump. But what you have now is women who are putting on spectacular shows. Will it ever translate to the big show?
Not to Paul White.
To Raw, SmackDown? I don't know.
It's still waiting to be seen. Because as much as this quote-unquote Divas Revolution is happening, it's not the level that we've had.
Because it is coming off too much as a gimmick. It's a nice try. I'd rather have them try than not try. And it was interesting to see, what match was it? It was Bella's versus someone for 20 seconds or something that started the hashtag Divas Revolution.
Yeah, it was. I don't remember who they were.
And it was like,
Give Divas a chance.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Like, you can watch Shimmer, and you can't tell me that there's not...
Glow.
You can't tell me that there's not women out there who can go and go strong.
So even with Glow being like mostly fitness models and a manufactured show, it's still like... That still has more time and character to it than modern women's wrestling.
Absolutely.
And we got Ivory out of it. So that's even more, at
CAC one year, I rode down in an elevator with Ivory.
Yeah.
Talking about marking out. I just kind of sat there quietly like, hello.
What are you telling me? We've got a whole bunch of collages here at the AfterBuzz Studios, and I see Little Egypt.
I've seen her at CAC a lot, too.
What day is she here? Because I just want to be like,
she's great.
God.
She's also very funny on Twitter. A lot of the Glow, the older Glow women go to CAC every year. Mm-hmm. If you've never been to CAC, join up, become a member. Cauliflower Alley Club is an alumni association. Takes $25-$30 to join. The ticket's about $140. You get two banquets, and it's a great experience if you love the history of this business. Anyways, off track. But like Paige, literally, people ask me who's some of your favorite wrestlers. Paige, mm-hmm. Not because they think she's an attractive, cute British girl, goth thing. No, because watching her in the ring is awesome. The speed at which she wrestles, which is one of the differences when you watch some of the women wrestlers who aren't quite there or in the past who are models turned wrestlers, the speed at what they wrestle is different than the men do. And that's not saying that they can't do it. It's just the women who can do it have been given the chance.
Yeah, it's a different
you
pace.
Watch Paige in the ring, her kicks, her clotheslines, her momentum is at a level on parallel with men, and that is what I love seeing getting the chance, I'm a big proponent of it. I want to see more and more. This Divas Revolution is probably not going as planned. It's a little forced, but it's all right. We'll work through it.
I think right now everybody's just hoping that Charlotte beats Nikki Bella so that they shut up about the whole record thing, so that she, like, because right now it'll the thing happen. is that Nikki wants to beat AJ's reign.
Sure.
And then the argument is, well, she hasn't been defending it the whole time. She's been in tag matches and,
right,
and
right.
on the sidelines. So it's like, well, does that mean anything? Like, are you...
Look, I think it does. And you know what? Look, don't forget, these are all props. It's all stories. So if Nikki Bella wants to set the record and then Charlotte breaks the streak, then that's great. You know, it's all right. The Bellas, I've always kind of been a fan of the Bellas just because we kind of need them in a weird way. We need those kind of villains. Yes, they're lipstick pretty. I get it. They're total divas. I would rather see Natty Neidhart on the top of the division again, and I'd rather see her get the chance to wrestle.
Yeah, just because Tyson is gone,
she's wrestling on house shows. When her and Beth Phoenix did the Divas of Destruction thing, I loved watching Beth Phoenix work. That kind of pains me a little bit in terms of watching the Bellas. But look, it's politics a little bit when your mom's going to be engaged to John Laurinaitis and you're
with Cena. I saw that and I was like, are you kidding me?
Look, I get it. But hey, they left and came back. They did it. It'll happen, though. It'll happen. Yeah. The shift will happen. We just got to kind of sift through the start of this Divas Revolution that is very prepackaged, and as long as Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and Paige get a chance to show them their wares every week and the crew coming up behind them, I wish Emma would get another chance, and I think she will.
I think she will now.
It was smart to go down. The bubbles didn't work. The petty theft didn't work. To go down and reestablish herself is a good thing. Bailey's fun to watch. There's a lot of great stuff going on.
Did you hear there was a report recently? I brought it up on the last week's NXT. There was an agent backstage who said if Bailey ever starts doing Make-A-Wish things, that she would destroy Cena.
Cena's record?
Yeah.
She's a hugger.
Ridiculously over.
And I just hope that translates. The one thing we're seeing, NXT is the hottest thing in wrestling right now. I watch it every week, but I watch Raw every week. You can't overlook the fact that Raw is for the general populace. And still, even now, when you show up on Raw, it doesn't matter what you've done on NXT, it's still gonna be a challenge. Kevin Owens, great start, still going, and he'll stay there. But you know, it doesn't seem as the energy's a little missing from it now.
Yeah,
not his fault.
No,
Cesaro, we've seen him go up and down. The Ascension is the biggest example to me of how something that killed at NXT and was fun to watch fell so flat when it hit the general populace and got that big time sheen.
So, what do you think about the Cosmic Wasteland?
What I think about it?
Yeah.
I just saw that tweet.
That was on Thursday, where it was Neville and Stardust, and before Neville even got to the ring, the Ascension showed up and just beat the crap out of him.
Okay.
And then Stardust ran a little promo and ended it with Welcome to the Cosmic Wasteland.
Oh, I didn't, you know what? You're teaching me something new. I like that. I love Cody Rhodes. I'm a big Cody Rhodes
so
guy.
So good.
I think
Stardust is just stupidly magical.
It's one of my, I love Stardust. I think he still follows me on Twitter. It's the weirdest thing. I did a show, somehow it came up, I was on a show with Arda or Kyle, who is now Kyle Edwards. And I was on a little panel show with him, and I said something about Cody Rhodes, how I love that he added knee pads, and Cody Rhodes followed me for. I think he's still out there. I love Cody Rhodes. He has the ability to change and adapt his character, and that's to me what longevity is about in wrestling business.
And that's something that I think he gets from his Diddy.
Absolutely.
And something that'll show he's going to be one of the people on top. Just yep. And it's just a matter of time.
Right.
And speaking about women's wrestling is it'll be interesting to see what this next generation at NXT has, because right now it seems they're doing the female bodybuilder. We've got Dana Brooke,
Nia Jax.
Yeah, Nia Jax. That'll be interesting. I think they're going for like a Bull Nakano, Awesome Kong sort of a thing.
Right.
Even what do you think of Eva Marie right now? So that's essentially a heel magnet.
It is, and it's kind of go away heat. Look, again, you're always going to have the model turned fitness thing. I think she's a beautiful, sweet woman by all accounts. You know, it's not her fault. I know for a fact that. I wasn't involved, but I know the person who had this conversation. When Cena got the call and became Cena and the push started to happen, this is 2002, whatever it was, John himself said, what am I going to do? I might not be ready for this. I might only have the 6 moves. But what am I going to do? They're giving this to me, and I want it. I'm going to take it. Mm-hmm. And look what happened to him. I'm actually a Cena fan.
Me too.
I actually am a Cena fan. I think I could speak for an hour about how great I think he actually is. But
that'll be the next episode.
To talk about Eva Marie, what else is she going to do? They signed her. They pushed her. She can't work. But you know what? She comes out here to L.A. and trains with Kendrick to try to learn. I give a person that kind of credit. Mm-hmm. Will it work out? I don't know.
Like, I wonder what it would take to turn the crowd into from legitimate get out heat to just like the heat that she
That's
wants.
That's the thing about wrestling; you never know.
Nope. Did you watch this last week with the false decision?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah. So there was a thing where she was down on the ground. It was clearly a 3.
Yeah.
Even it was like a split second where it was 1, 2, and like right it was 3. Is like he stopped and okay. like hey get up get off or whatever, and it definitely probably was a miscue.
Okay.
Or Eva kind of got knocked for a loop.
Yeah.
And was just like, crap, is that 1 or is that 2? No matter what, just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't care what number it is. Just put your own shoulder up. But now I wanted to go into an area of that ref was in her pocket from the reality show money.
Hey, absolutely. Do it. And if the crowd is going to boo her, use that.
Exactly.
All right? Die, Rocky, die. turned into one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Not saying we'll that see. Eva Marie might be one of the greatest of all time.
I'm not saying that either, but I'm not going to take.
Time will tell.
I'm not going to take the opportunity away from her.
No, and it's great to see that she wants something like this, and she's going to keep training and all that. And
others would have gone away by this point.
Yeah, and that's why I'm in the camp of just mm-hmm. wait.
Yeah.
You can't. Instant gratification is all what the
and
world
it,
is about.
It will
right
sort
now.
Itself out. Mm-hmm. You know, Cameron from the Funkadactyls. It'll sort itself out. You know?
That's a great way of putting it. I love talking wrestling.
As do I.
And even just hearing people talk wrestling. So, we then this is what the gimmick is. The gimmick is just, hey, let's hang out and talk wrestling.
Absolutely.
So,
that's a good gimmick.
Yeah. It started from something so simple. I learned a lot about you, Ken.
Good.
And I'm happy to have talked with you. We should do this again sometime in a proper studio.
This is a pretty proper studio.
Well, I mean
we're recording
proper,
on your phone.
Yes.
But, but it's good. It's good. Hey, but you gotta make it happen. This is like wrestling, man. Mm-hmm. You gotta crawl. All of life's greatest lessons are from pro wrestling.
What is life's greatest wrestling pro?
I wrote this in my high school yearbook. Life is like pro wrestling. Sometimes the good guy wins. Sometimes the bad guy wins. But most of the time, the referee gets knocked out and all hell breaks loose.
And with that, the folks already know you because they were brought into this podcast from your mere charisma. But where can the folks find you?
Hey, at Ken Napzok, N-A-P-Z-O-K, on all social media platforms. There's a Facebook fan page. You can follow the Napzok Files podcast feed. There's also a podcast feed out there called the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. It's not active, but there's still stuff up there. And the reason I keep it up is I did some Raw reviews and recaps and all that kind of stuff. But there's a series of shows called the California Classic Wrestling Podcast done by Dan Farron, who is my mentor in the wrestling and sometimes comedy and storytelling and just life business. Dan Farron is a historian of wrestling, and he's got some great shows on the Wrestling Viewpoint Network on iTunes and Stitcher, talking about the history of wrestling in L.A., which is bigger and grander than people often give it credit for.
Check that out. I didn't know that was a thing. I'm going to do that. Got a lot of long drives coming up. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Ken. As always, you can follow The Gimmick here at The Gimmick Pod on Twitter. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, especially if they don't like Eva Marie. Give them a place to complain and shout about them, as if our comment section on AfterBuzz wasn't a good enough place for that. But we'll be back whenever we're back. We don't have a schedule because, fuck it, it's professional wrestling. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
So there you have it, a fun little interview with Mark Donica at the helm. You can follow those boys at The Gimmick Pod on Twitter and follow their adventures that are going to be here now on the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Until next time, I'm Ken Napzok. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review, and we'll see you in the ring.